Now, this is the fourth talk in the series on proclamation, and tonight I'm just going to do a few ad hoc things here and there, different topics, mopping up a few different issues and areas, and clarifying what we mean by proclamation, because it is one of the more confusing topics. And I would say this, one of the most confusing things that people struggle with this whole thing, is who am I talking to? And in what capacity? Who am I addressing? Because you see, people are familiar with the concept of prayer, but when they mean prayer, they mean supplication. Now, prayer is an umbrella term and doesn't just mean supplication. But what most of us mean when we say the word prayer is supplication. Now, what is supplication? Supplication means asking for things. So when we are engaging in supplication, not many people use that word, but it's the word that people mean when they say the word prayer, generally. Prayer is a broader word, but mostly when people use the word prayer, they mean supplication, and that means asking God for things. That's basically what many people think is all that it is. That's it. So, when you then advocate to someone that they engage in proclamation or declaration or confession, they think, well, hang on a minute, you're saying I need to aggressively proclaim things. Are you saying I need to aggressively speak to God and aggressively ask for things? No, because it isn't God that you're speaking to when you're engaging in proclamation, do you see? So, and then I mentioned when we last spoke, but I'll just go through it in more detail now, an analogy really that you could use, because when you're doing proclamation, when you're declaring, when you're confessing, you need to know, who am I speaking to? And it's the same as if you went into an office. Imagine you were a supervisor in an office, or whatever you were, a secretary, or you could be a manager of a department, or whoever you are. You know who you are, and you know who the people are that you're speaking to. So imagine you're a supervisor on a certain shift or a certain part of the office, and you know that there are people above you in the office, there are people below you in the office, you know that there are people who are suppliers, who are visitors to the office, they might be customers, they might be patients, they might be clients, they might be visiting tradesmen, they might be the man who comes to fix the photocopier, they could be the man who's fixing the computers, and various other kinds of people. Or they could be bosses, or they could be opponents. They could be opponents or rivals from other businesses, or they could be an enemy of the business that's causing harm to the business, or they could be a trespasser on the premises. They could be someone coming into the premises to cause criminal damage, and you come across them and they're damaging some property, and you are a security officer at that place, or a supervisor or manager. Now, can you see that for all these different people, you will speak in different ways according to who you're speaking to? So if you come across some teenagers causing damage or graffiti at the premises, you'll speak to them in a different way than if you were speaking to some secretaries at the office asking them if they would please stay and do some overtime. Can you see? Now, in the same way that you don't have any difficulty at all identifying with the different tone, content, manner, demeanor, even level of volume that you would have in each of those different situations, you think, yeah, I can fully understand. If I'm talking to a boss, I'll talk like this. If I'm talking to a secretary to give instruction, I'll talk like this. If I'm talking to someone to ask a favor, I'll talk like this. If I'm talking to a colleague on the same level as me, I'll talk like this. If I'm talking to a customer, I'll speak like this. If I'm speaking to a trespasser on the premises, I'll speak like this. Do you see? You see that? Everybody see that? Well, when we're engaging in proclamation, same thing. Who are we speaking to? Now, it may be that when we're in doing this, we are speaking to... it could be that we are speaking to, as we spoke of the other week, the heavenlies. We could be speaking to that whole network of demonic force and power that's engaged, that's arrayed against us. The whole network of them up there in the heavenly places, the high, the senior demons that are conspiring, that are working, that are affecting us. They're imposing and developing strongholds in our lives, preventing what's happening in our church or in our business or in our family. Or it could be that we're speaking to the ground level demons that are operating within our home at a lower level. Or it could be that we're making declaration and we're speaking actually to ourselves. And remember how I've mentioned in the past, like a person is almost a little like a committee. You have within the one person, those who are entitled to use the pronoun I would be your will, your mind, your body, your emotions, and your spirit, and of course also your old man, your sin nature. Now every one of those is entitled to say I. You see? I, your body can say I. Your mind can say I think. Your emotions can say I feel. Your body can say I do, or I act, or I perform, I go, I travel, I jump. And your will says I will. Your will can also speak to the other parts of you and say you will. You will do this, you will do that. And what's the classic example of that is King David speaking to his own soul. You remember? Telling his own soul to give thanks. Telling his own soul to rejoice. Telling it to praise. Telling it what to do. So the thing is, one of the things you're doing is speaking to that those different aspects of yourself. And if you liken yourself to a committee, the committee chairman is your will, and the committee chairman is speaking to one of his fellow company directors on the board. So around this boardroom table, you have your chairman, who's the will, you have the mind, who's like one of the finance director, you have the emotions, you might be the HR director, and then all around the table they are. And the will, the will can speak to any of those and tell them. So frequently when you are proclaiming, not always, but one of the audiences that you may be speaking to is one or more of those parts of yourself. And this is highly relevant when we come to dealing with renewing your mind, dealing with things like breaking curses over yourself, especially self-imposed curses. I'll come on to that a bit later on. But you can speak to the different parts of yourself and give instruction to yourself, and also begin to make each of the parts of yourself relearn what they think, what they believe, and what they're going to do, and what they're going to expect, and what they're hoping in, and so on and so on and so on. So your will is the one that can actually make decisions. The will can say what's going to happen no matter what it feels. The will can say what's going to happen no matter what it thinks. The will can say what the body is going to do no matter whether it wants to or not. You see. And so that is another one of the audiences you may be speaking to in proclamation. But the one person you're not speaking to really, or not very often at any rate, in proclamation is God himself. You don't give orders to God, you don't instruct God, you don't do any of that for him. You ask him, you praise him, you glorify him, you magnify him, you bless him, you do all those things. But when we speak of proclamation in more of an aggressive context, or an assertive context, or an instructional context, or a commanding context, it's not God you're speaking to. Nobody's going to command God or tell him what he must do or instruct him how he must be. So wherever there's any of that sort of dimension to it, it is not God that we're speaking to. But it may be any number of other kinds of person that we would exactly do that. Yeah, sorry.
Can we remind God of his promises?
That's a very good point. Now then we are not instructing him. The question is, can we remind God of his promises? Absolutely. Now who are you speaking to when you remind God of his promises? Well, firstly, you're speaking to him, aren't you? But I don't think he really needs reminding, because he's not forgotten, has he? So who are we really talking to when we remind God of his promises? I mean, the reality of it is, we're telling ourselves, aren't we? So if we remind God that he has promised that he will provide for us, we remind God that he has promised that he will protect us, and so forth and so on. Well, he already knows that. So who we're really talking to is ourselves. But what we are doing is this. We are taking a promise that God has made. We are relying upon it. We are telling him that we rely upon it. And we are claiming it. Now that is not instructing, commanding, or telling God what to do. But there is a sense in which we can go to the chairman of the board, we can go to our boss and say, you've told me that I can have a week's holiday in the summer, and I would like to come and claim that week's holiday. I'd like to book it for such a time. You see? Now what are you doing? You're not commanding him, but you're coming and making a reminding of a promise. That's a valid thing to do. So sometimes what you'll do in proclamation is that. So I want to emphasize how multidimensional proclamation is. There isn't just one thing that you do. It's a whole golf, what do you call them, a bag with a whole set of golf clubs in. And you've got those little light ones and the great big heavy ones and all sorts of ones that you'll use according to the situation you're in. So one of the first questions you ask yourself about proclamation when engaging in it is, who do I think I'm talking to? Now you don't normally need to do this in the office, do you? You don't stand there and say, if you did it, you'd probably be relieved of your duties, wouldn't you? Who am I? Who am I talking to? Then probably you'd be taken to a place of safety. But in this context, you would do that. You would say, first of all, who do I think I am? Well, who do I think I am? I am part of the priesthood of all believers. I'm seated with Christ in heavenly places. I have the authority that comes from being a believer. I'm a new creation. Do you see? Now, why do you need to say you're a new creation? Why do you need to tell yourself that? Because you might not really know it or feel it. Now, it could be that your mind knows it, but your feelings don't feel it. Do you see? So one of the things you're doing, saying that. Let's just take that as one of hundreds of examples of what we might do. Who are we talking about and to, and who do we think we are when we say it? Well, you're saying, I am a new creation. Now, the point is, knowing that you're a new creation is a massive discovery, which you might not really know. None of the parts of you might know that. But the fact is, you can see it written on the page. You see it there. It's written. And you can see that it's the case. And so you're now informing your mind, you're informing your emotions, you're informing your body that you are a new creation. Or it might be that, for example, you doubt yourself whether you can do things. You doubt whether you can achieve what you're supposed to be achieving. And so you might then quote from Philippians, I can do all things in Christ, through Christ who strengthens me. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Now the context of that verse is Paul speaking about how he could deal with all sorts of crises and insufficiencies and lack of this and lack of that and problems of this and problems of that. He didn't mean that he could, you know, be in the Olympics, or he meant he could deal with any of the things, any of the situations he might come up against. So who is he? Who would we be saying that to?
Ourselves.
to ourselves. So that's one that we'd be saying to ourselves. But sometimes we're not, you see. Now, who else might we be speaking to? There's various things. So we could be speaking to the demons. We could be... And by the way, let me clarify. I don't mean having a chat. I don't mean saying, pull up a chair. Let's have a chat. You know, and my name's this. Who are you? And what kind of a demon are you? I don't mean that. Where do you live? You know, oh, interesting. No, not that kind of a talk. We don't chat with demons. But what we can do, bearing in mind that they are bombarding you with thoughts the whole time, is you can declare in front of them what you believe. And a good time to do that is when they're bombarding you. So when they're telling you how worthless you are, you can just start reciting verses that say that you're not worthless, that you are of infinite value, and that you are a new creation. And when they tell you that you're dirty and filthy and you're not forgiven, you see, if we confess our sins, he is faithful and just to forgive our sins and cleanse us of all unrighteousness. 1 John 1:9. So you're reminding them and yourself and them and letting things be known. So you're declaring things, and they are one of the audience members. And other times you might be not just speaking in a way of reminding, declaring, announcing, but rather commanding. There are times when you would be commanding. So you might think, commanding what? Well, for example, sometimes we will speak to the very circumstances. There are times in Scripture where you would even speak not only to people, but to things, to circumstances, to obstacles in your path. You see? Now, that can happen. And let's look at one or two examples of this. Here's an example early on in the Bible, in the book of Numbers, where God tells Moses to speak to the rock. So he says, "And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, take the rod, and you and your brother Aaron, assemble the congregation, and speak to the rock before their eyes, that it may yield its water. Okay? You shall thus bring forth water for them out of the rock, and let the congregation and their beasts drink." So there was this rock, and Moses was to speak to the rock. Now, I'm not advocating that you go around all the time speaking to cars and rocks and houses and things. But there are times when you need to speak to the situation, speak to the circumstances. And how would you speak? You wouldn't say to the rock, "Hello rock, how are you? This is my name, I live near, where do you live?" Now that's not what we mean by speaking to the rock. That's not what Moses did. So what did Moses do to the rock? He was meant to command the rock. Actually, in the example I gave, Moses messed up. What he was meant to do was to command the rock, to speak to the rock. He actually struck the rock, which he did the first time. He wasn't meant to do that this time. He was meant to speak to the rock. Now, the point is, that's a separate issue. The point is, what was he meant to do? Speak to the rock. Okay, well, what about other times when that's happened? What about when Jesus spoke to the storm? And we see this in Mark 4:35-41. And they were on, as you know the story, they were on the lake. And it says, "And there arose a fierce gale of wind, and the waves were breaking over the boat, so much that the boat was already filling up. Jesus himself was in the stern, asleep on the cushion. And they woke him and said to him, 'Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?' And he got up," wait for it, "and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, 'Hush, be still.' And the wind died down and it became perfectly calm." Okay? "And he said to them, 'Why are you afraid? Do you still have no faith?' They became very much afraid and said to one another, 'Who then is this that even the wind and the sea obey him?'" And then on another occasion, Jesus came into town, and it's in Mark 11:13-14. It says, "Seeing at a distance a fig tree in leaf, he went to see if perhaps he could find anything on it. And when he came to it, he found nothing but leaves, for it was not the season for figs. He said to it, "May no one ever eat fruit from you again." And his disciples were listening. And then what happens is a little later, they come back, and they go off and do their business and come back. And as they were passing by in the morning, they saw the fig tree withered from the roots up. Being reminded, Peter said to him, "Rabbi, look, the fig tree which you cursed has withered." So there was Jesus, there was Moses speaking to a rock, Jesus speaking to the lake, to the storm. He spoke to the storm and to the waves. And then, of course, Jesus speaking to a fig tree. Now, does that mean that we're to make a practice of habitually speaking to objects, situations and circumstances? No. Not as a practice. Not as an habitual practice where we're always doing this. But there are times, you see. There are times when you would do that. So in such a situation, you would be speaking to the situation. What might that be? It might be a situation of danger, a situation of insufficiency, a situation of ill health, a situation of opposition, an obstacle, a stronghold, a difficulty. It could be any number of things, and you will speak to the situation. And so one example I think I may have given you before is once when we started our new business, we left an old practice which was up and running and had a history and had a cash flow, and started absolutely from scratch with a new business. Zero cash flow, zero pipeline, no work in progress, no old files that were coming to fruition, no old jobs that were coming up to get paid, just nothing. So for quite a while, for about 2 years, we had to get by with next to nothing. And that's what you call a cash flow crisis. We had to pay the staff, we had to do other things, but we had very little coming in. And at that time, I wanted to get the Inland Revenue to repay me what they owed me. And I rang up and spoke to this chap, and he told me it would take weeks for them even to look at my file, and even then it would take weeks for it to be processed and the repayment made. And I needed that. I needed it urgently to deal with the situation I was in, starting this new business, which I believe God wanted me to start. In fact, I know he did. So, there were two things I did. The first is, I believe God gave me a gift of faith, which is a spiritual gift, the gift of faith. I had the faith to deal with the situation, which he gave to me supernaturally. The second point is this. I engaged in proclamation. And so, and it's relevant to this that I'm speaking of now, of speaking to the situation, or speaking to an institution, or to an organization, or to some kind of obstacle. And I went out that evening after work, having been told that this is not happening for weeks, we're not even looking at your file, and then it's going to take weeks even after that for us to pay you. I went that evening, and we stood outside the office of the Inland Revenue, and we prayed in faith, and that's one thing. Separate point, we also proclaimed, and we commanded them to release our money to us. We spoke with authority and told the Inland Revenue to release our money to us. Now, I don't, as I say, make a practice of habitually speaking to institutions or to objects or and so forth. But the point is, I had been given the gift of faith to believe that I could do this, to pray in faith and also to speak with authority to that institution that was denying me what God wanted me to have. Then, the point was that within a day, I think it was just over a day, they rang me and said, I can't remember what day it was. If that was, say, a Tuesday, I went out. On the Thursday morning, they rang me to say, I didn't ring them. Your payment has been dealt with, your file has been processed, and your payment is on its way to you. Now, this was meant to take about 10 weeks, and it was done within 36 hours. Now, the point is, that's an example of speaking to an inanimate object or an institution or an organization or a business or a whatever. That's an example of how that is done. Now, that doesn't mean that we're always to do that, but there are times to do it. And in the same way at your place of work, you are not always confronting trespassers. You are not always telling people to leave the premises, are you? Unless you live in a strange office. You're not always going around commanding people to leave the premises. But there are times when you do. And that's why you need to be, you know, able to use more than one golf club. So imagine if all you did all day long at work was command people to leave the premises. People would say, this man needs to develop more people skills, wouldn't they? Do you see? So that's not the only thing that you need to do. It's not the only thing, but there are times when that is exactly what you need to do. And then there are other times when you go and see a boss and you ask for a pay rise. You don't command him to give you a pay rise. If you were to go and ask a boss for a pay rise, that would be very similar to supplication, asking God for something. Now then you are praying, you are, you know, asking. Other times you will go and give instruction. So you're not commanding a trespasser to leave the building, but you are now speaking to, say, one of your team, and you're saying, go here, do this, come back, bring it with you. Go and do this, go and get that, go and fetch this, go and fix that. You're giving instruction to a team member. Now there are times in proclamation we can give instruction to others, and also even to parts of ourselves. We can instruct our soul to worship, instruct our soul to praise, instruct our soul to give thanks, and so on. And other times, other things we can give instruction to. So, another thing, another aspect to this, the role that proclamation plays in revoking self-imposed curses, or curses you've spoken over others, and replacing them with blessings. Now, a blessing is a thing in its own right. It's a thing that very few people ever think about or have ever attempted to define. But what is a blessing? It's an aspect of a proclamation in a certain sense. It's a kind of proclamation, but it's a particular kind. It comes under the generic umbrella heading of proclamation. It belongs to the family, the genus proclamation. It belongs to the family, but it's a kind of proclamation. And what's a blessing? A blessing is something that you are authorized to do. And we've seen how various people in the Bible have blessed others. And when they blessed others, it was not God doing it. It was them doing it, you see. And the example we gave, I think, one time was Isaac blessing Jacob and blessing Esau. It was not God doing it. It was Isaac doing it. And we know that King David, it says, he went home and blessed his household. So he went home and blessed his family. And that's something that the Jewish people do, and we don't do it, and we should. But on at the Friday night, when they have the Shabbat meal, the father of the family goes around and prays blessing over his family. But he doesn't just ask God to give them his blessing, he gives them his own blessing. Do you see the difference? Of course, there's nothing at all wrong with asking God to bless somebody. It's perfectly right and proper. That is one of the golf clubs in your golf bag. But another golf club in your golf bag is for you to bless somebody. Now, you can impart a blessing to someone, and that's something you are perfectly able to do. Now, that's one of the things that we will do when dealing with self-imposed curses, or curses that we have spoken over others in the past, which we shouldn't have done, or curses that others have spoken over others, and we're now giving a blessing to that person. Now take, for example, what do I mean by a self-imposed curse? Now the word curse is another word which we ought to look at. What is a curse? Very similar to a blessing. It's something that you have the power to do. It's not God doing it, although he does also curse people. And in fact, he curses people a lot of the time, and he's You know, it's something he's doing a great deal of the time. But be that as it may, we're speaking at the moment about what we do. We can curse people. Others can curse us. We can curse them. You see, like a curse and a blessing are words spoken in faith. They are words that have power to affect the lives of others. And this is the way that it works. And in part, you might say, well, where does the power come from? How does it work? And I've thought long and hard about this. And I think that it comes from the fact that we're made in the image of God. We're in his image. And one of the things he can do is to create by his own voice. He can speak blessing. He can speak curses. He can speak things into being. He can create with his own voice. And to a degree, in a very much watered down way, so can we. We can speak blessings over people and really affect them. We can speak curses over people and really affect them, which is an aspect of what witchcraft is all about. So what is witchcraft? It's really the manipulation, the domination, and the control of others, the exerting of mind control over others, the use of spells and incantations and curses and other forms of sorcery and so on, in order, and the use as well of demonic power to influence, control, dominate and manipulate other people. And that's a great big umbrella term, witchcraft. Part of that is cursing, and cursing is something we can do, and we can engage in witchcraft if we go wrong and start to do that without having any idea that we're engaging in witchcraft. We can be cursing people, and we shouldn't be doing that, but I mention it because it's something that we can do. And the corollary of that is you can also bless people. So back to the point, how do we use proclamation to deal with these issues? Let's take self-imposed curses. What are they? Things you've said about yourself. This is a big deal. It's a big deal. You must be very careful what you say about and over yourself. You must not curse yourself. And you must not, for a start, something that you might say over yourself is something said in faith. It's a word uttered in faith. You believe it. Secondly, it's something that you're doing that falls within your authority as one who has the authority to bless and curse. You have the authority to bless and curse. And you have the authority to bless and curse yourself. And it's real. So, how might you do it? You might say things about yourself. I'll never be able to do this or that. You know, you hear people say, you hear others saying how they just, they'll never be able to get the hang of maths. They'll never be any good at maths. They'll never be able to play the violin. They'll never be able to roller skate. They'll never be able to fill in the blank, whatever it is, ride a horse, pass their driving test, this or that, you name it. They're saying it over themselves. And there are some things that people have said over themselves hundreds of times throughout their lives. And one that came up the other day was not being able to remember things. Oh, I've got a terrible memory. I can't remember a thing. I can't remember anything. I can never remember things. I'll never be able to remember things. I'll never be able to do that. Now, these are things that, there's a fine line between simply making a kind of statement of fact or of opinion or something and cursing yourself. If you keep saying things about yourself like that, pretty soon you're going to bind yourself by your own cursing words. So what can you do to begin to counteract that? Well, first of all, stop doing it. Stop cursing yourself. Stop saying that you can't do things. You never hear Paul writing in Philippians how he can't do maths and he can't pass his driving test. He never mentions his driving test in Philippians, does he? You never hear him saying that kind of thing. He says, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. He doesn't say, except pass my driving test, maths, learn a foreign language, do computers. Do you see, he doesn't say those things, does he? He doesn't say those things. And we mustn't. So don't go around saying what you'll never be able to do, you'll never be able to learn, you'll never be able to get. I'll never get out of debt. I'll never be able to pass my driving test. The things people say, have you not heard these things? Have you heard yourself saying these things? Well, you mustn't. So that's why when I use examples, if I'm trying to give someone an example of something, I'll use ridiculous things, like I'll never be a central heating engineer, or those kind of things. I don't even like to say negative words about myself, even in jest, even as an example. It's just not good. It's not a good habit to get into, even in jest. So in particular, then, don't say that about your children. Don't say negative things about your kids. So you could say of a child, you could make a statement of fact, that behaviour is bad. But don't say you are bad. Or don't say, you could say, if you don't, homework is necessary, hard work is necessary to succeed. But don't say you'll never succeed. Do you see? And so you could say, well, if you want to pass your exams, you must work. But don't say you'll never pass your exams. See the difference? Don't speak as a parent as a cursing negative word over a child. Quite apart from the emotional damage it does, it's also a cursing word. Now, what if these things have been said over you? What can you do about it? They've been said by you, about yourself, or by others about you. One of the worst culprits of all is school teachers who say things over you. You'll never do this. You'll never do that. Never really happened to me. I never struggled at school. I never had anyone telling me I couldn't do maths or couldn't do this or that. But I know there are people who have got that. And they've got teachers have said things to them. You'll never be any good. You'll never get any use. You'll never get a good job, or you'll never pass your exams. That kind of thing. I think it used to happen a lot more in the past, when teachers used to be more negative than they are. They don't say a word today, do they? It's a bit different today. They don't say anything. But back in the old days, they used to be very vicious at times in the things they'd say. Unwittingly sometimes, you know, without realising. But some teacher might have said over you that you would never be any good at maths, or you couldn't pass an exam. And that has formed a stronghold in your life. It's a curse over you, and you need to break it. So first of all, ask God to break it. But secondly, start making a positive confession in the opposite way. You know, I can do mathematics through Jesus Christ who strengthens me. I can pass a driving test through Jesus Christ who strengthens me. Well, you must be able to, because he says all things that you would ever need or have any practical need for. It doesn't mean I can win gold medal in the Olympics through Jesus Christ who strengthens me, because God hasn't called you to the Olympics. But he has called you to learn maths. He has called you to get a job. He has called you to pass your driving test. He has called you to do these things, practical things that you need and that he wants you to have. You can do, and you can speak in that way and speak a blessing over yourself. So, any other ad hoc points to make? Let me just see. Here's an example of something that comes in the area of the gift of faith, but also is a proclamation. This is a confession made by someone I know. I used to know him, a very good friend of mine in the past. I've not seen him recently. This is a man I used to be very close to, about sort of 20 odd years ago. And he was, he just had a new baby, their second child, third child it was. It was their third child. And this child was diagnosed with cerebral palsy. And it was a big shock to the family and to the church. But anyway, he came to the church on the Sunday morning after this had been diagnosed. Because there was clearly something wrong with the baby, you could tell. It was kind of limp. His arms and legs were not functioning. And you could see with your own eyes something was very wrong. And the doctor said it had cerebral palsy. Now, he stood up that Sunday morning and he told us what the doctors had said. But then he said, I am not accepting that. That is not going to be my son's future. Do you see? Now he announced, he made an aggressive, bold proclamation of faith. He spoke in faith and he said that is not going to be his future. Because they had said to him, he won't be able to walk. You'll need to get a new house or move house, or you'll have to make him a downstairs bedroom because he won't be able to walk. So he was told this, and he could have accepted that, but he didn't. Now there's two things at work here. First of all, I think he was given the gift of faith, because I don't think he was a great theologian who understood everything to the nth degree, and he was quite a young chap, but he stood up and said things that came not from him. I think God inspired him to stand up and make this proclamation. And he said, that's not going to happen. That's not his future. I don't accept it. It will not happen to him. Do you see? And we were inspired by just listening to him. So when we heard him, faith spread to the audience. We got the gift of faith. But also, he made a crucial declaration that day. And that was the day that his son had his whole future changed. Do you see? So what happened was, the whole church prayed. We kept praying. And this boy changed and developed. And far from never learning to walk, he learned to walk. Far from just being able to walk barely, he began to walk perfectly well, and then to run and to be totally normal. And as far as I'm aware, he's completely normal. And if there's anything wrong with him at all, it's negligible. And he hasn't got cerebral palsy. Now you might say, well, maybe he never had. Maybe it was a mistake. Well, the point is, I think he had. But even if that's not the case, and the doctor was completely wrong, the point is, there was something wrong with that kid. You could see it with your own eyes. You didn't need a doctor to tell you. And whatever it was, whether it was cerebral palsy or something else, it was bad. And so, but he hasn't got it now. And I believe it's because of what that dad said on that day. And such are the critical turning points of history in people's lives. So that's an example of it. Let me just think any other points I can fill in. Another thing, accusation. Now, one of the things that the demons are forever doing is accusing you. Accusing you of this and accusing you of that. They accuse you uphill and down dale. You know, you'll never be any good. You'll never be a central heating engineer. You'll never amount to anything. You'll never learn maths. And you call yourself a Christian, the things you do. Yeah, what, someone like you? And the way you live, the way you act, look at the way you think, and I know the way you act. You'll never be anything. You're not even worthy to be a Christian. And so on. Now, people get these things. I don't tend to get this so much. I think I've learned to deal with it. But so, I'm told people do. They're bombarded with accusation. One of the things I do get, I've mentioned before, is I keep getting bombarded with the thought that the things I'm preaching about aren't needed. Everybody knows that. You don't need to say it. You don't need to write it. And I've learned not to pay any attention to that. So that's one thing I get bombarded with. You don't need to write that. Nobody needs that. Everybody knows that. You don't need to write that. But I've learned to ignore that, and I just press on. Some people get accused about all sorts of stuff. They're not worthy, you know, they're not fit to this, they're not fit for that, they're no good as a husband, they're no good as a wife, they're no good as an elder, they're no good as a Christian, and so on. Now that's what's called accusation. And the thing is, you might think, well, what's all this about? Where's it coming from? Well, look at this. Revelation 12:10. It says, then I heard a loud voice in heaven saying, now the salvation and the power and the kingdom of our God and the authority of his Christ have come. For the accuser of our brethren has been thrown down, he who accuses them before our God day and night. Now the point is this, Satan and the demons, one of the things they're doing, because they're legalists, is accusing you. They're laying charges against you before God. They're accusing you. They're also accusing you to you. But they're accusing you to him. And that is why one of the roles of Jesus is to be our advocate, our intercessor, our intermediary, our high priest. That's one of the things he's doing, is dealing with the accusing ministry of Satan. That's part of it. But one of the things we've got to do is contend with the ground level accusation that's being directed towards us. Now, how will you do that? How will you use proclamation for that purpose? Where you're being accused of things, of lacking this or being that, or being full of guilt and sin, speak out. 1 John 1:9. Speak out other verses that speak of the fact that you're justified and that you're considered to be without sin, and you're how God views you, and that you're a new creation, and that, you name it, all sorts of other things to deal with the power of accusation being directed against you. So let me mention another thing, just briefly. It's not only what you say. Sometimes proclamation can even consist of what you do. There are times when you need to do things. You need to do things and actually take action where that action is consistent with what you believe or purport to believe. And I remember once we were dragged through a hedge backwards at about 90 miles an hour when we were in a crisis years ago. We left a law firm. I was ripped off. I was stolen from by these men in that law firm. God let it all happen because he wanted me to write about it and he wanted me to learn from it. And I think he wanted me to be dragged through several hedges backwards to learn things about what it feels like to be dragged through hedges. So he wanted me to learn all that. But at the same time, he wanted me to learn how to handle crises, how to handle opposition, how to handle wicked people, how to handle problems, and how to become an overcomer. All right? Now, this is an example of what I mean by sometimes it's what you do, not just what you say. And there was one particular night, and I think what had happened was we had just learned from my former business partners that they had basically stolen everything from me. I wasn't getting anything. And we'd realised that I wasn't going to get a penny. So I owned one third of this law firm, and they stole the lot. It's too long a story to tell here. I'll tell it in one or two of the books. But they stole the lot. And one night there came a kind of crunch point where we realised they'd stolen everything and we weren't getting it back. And it looked bleak. And we'd set up this business. We had no files, no staff, no equipment, no cash flow, no furniture, no equipment, nothing at all. Apart from that, we were a terrific law firm. But we had nothing at all, basically. And we had no money, and we had no anything. And so what do you do in a situation like that? Well, what did we do? We sat down in the living room and said, let's get champagne out and celebrate where we're going and what we're going to do. And something broke, you see, because what we could have done is wallowed and said, we've just been dragged by a high speed tractor across 9 fields and through several hedges, and now a herd of cattle have just stampeded over us and we better give up. And that's what the devil wants you to do. Give up. Just give up, will you? But the point is that not only did we speak, we declared, we proclaimed, we confessed, we made a positive confession, but we acted in a manner consistent with our belief. And another thing we did was we placed more advertisements to get more work. And we actually went out and advertised. And the adverts that we did, God anointed them. And they were absolutely mega fruitful, more fruitful than anything. And the funny thing is, these adverts I invented got copied all around the country. So God anointed me to produce these adverts that produced a huge amount of work, and then a whole bunch of other law firms copied them. But be that as it may, that's a side issue. The point is that as we began to act, God blessed our actions. And so your actions are also a way of proclaiming. So getting out champagne when you've just heard that all your money's been stolen, is an unusual way to respond. But I will confess, but it's the right way. Do you see? It's the right way. Not that I want to make a habit of it. Okay. Let me see. Any things arising out of that people want me to mention? Any other issues?
Just as you were speaking there, I was thinking of the centurion.
Yeah.
Who spoke to Jesus when he asked him to heal his...
That's right.
His servant, was it? And he says, you don't have to come because I've got men under me.
I'm a man under authority and have men under me.
Yeah. He says, I know that.
That's right.
You just say the word and it will be done.
That's it. Mm. And Jesus said, not in all Israel have you seen such faith. Because he said, I say to this one, go, and he goes, and this one, come, and he comes. Only say the word. And that was an example of this kind of proclamation, of confession. You know, what you say is so important. You need to learn what you say.
So counteracting things that other people say to you.
Yes.
Even when they don't mean it, somebody said to me recently, an old person said to me, oh, don't get old. I said, excuse me, I have every intention of living long enough to get old.
That's right. And have you ever heard people say to you, oh, when you're my age, you'll be like this, you'll have emphysema, and then they list a whole bunch of things you're going to have. And you say, no, I won't. Mm. I won't. And you see, people will try to speak things over you. And when our daughter was being dedicated, not baptised, dedicated, this very silly woman who was the wife of a local vicar, she used to come along to our sort of charismatic church that we were in. She didn't go to her husband's church, she came to our church, but she was a silly sort of woman. And she was all airy, fairy, and sort of super spiritual. And anyway, she came over to us when our daughter was being dedicated, and she just, unannounced, began to sort of speak prophetically over our daughter. And she started to say negative things about her. She started to speak negatively about her future. Now, I was there, and I stepped straight in and stopped her dead in her tracks. And I said, I reject everything you say. What you're saying is not from God. I reject everything you say in Jesus' name, and nothing of what you said will happen to her. And she was a little taken aback, but not offended, because you can't offend people like that. You can only annoy them. You can't offend them. And the point was, she was doing something wicked and awful. And she, I don't know what her motivation was. No doubt she was demonically sort of being used at that time.
Fortune-telling
type thing. She was just being demonically sort of used. Because the demons look around for someone they can use in any building, in a family, in a church, in a business. They look around. Who have we got that's kind of the person we could use? And she was such a person. Now the thing is, I had to step in and stop her. And I told her to stop, literally, to be quiet. And I told her, I rejected everything she said. I broke everything she said in Jesus' name. And I said, nothing of what you said is from God, and nothing of that will come upon her. I reject every word you're saying. And that was needed. And that was a confession. Now what if I said, oh, I don't want to offend her. Well, I don't want, oh, I better let her finish first, and then we'll just sort of ignore her. Do you see? No. You needed to make a confession there and then. And that's what I did. Anyway, I'll finish there.
Somebody said that to me once before I was a Christian at work. I said I was going to do something. They said, oh, you won't do it. You won't amount to anything.
Really?
Yeah. And I thought to myself, I didn't say it, I just thought to myself, I'll show you. I will do it.
Good.
And I did.
Well, that's a good confession. That's a good confession, but you need to watch out for that. Don't let anybody speak over you. You're going to end up with arthritis just like them. Mm-hmm. No, you're not. Say, no, I'm not. And it's not their place to tell you that you're going to get arthritis just like them. And it's not your place to receive such a word from them. So don't let people say it to you. And even if you think, well, that'll sound odd if I say, no, I'm not. No, you say, no, I'm not. I reject that. No way will I get that. In Jesus' name, I reject what you're saying. You might get a few odd looks, but you need to say it, because you can't accept those things being said over you. Anyway, I'll stop at that point.